I swear to you with my whole heart and my hand on the Holy Bible that what I'm telling you is the unvarnished truth without a shred of dirty falsehood in it. So help me God, hope to die, step on a crack and break my mother's back where she will never take another step in her miserably long life. I truly, seriously mean it. I do.
Amen.
What runs through your mind when you hear somebody talk like that, use words like that? Just think about it for a minute. Just take a minute or two. What's kind of your initial gut response when you hear somebody giving that kind of a little speech, some kind of a declaration? Somebody tell me. A couple of things come out. Keith? Oh, okay. They're trying to convince themselves, right? Yeah, that's good thought, by the way. Somebody back here?
So we're on the playground.
Oh, on the playground, right? Is this middle school or what? Yeah. No offense to you middle schoolers. We love you. Anybody else? Oh, that's a big one, right? Regardless, I think we immediately take pause when we hear somebody start to use all the words. Here's how N.T. Wright says it. Extra words, especially strong ones, call into question the speaker's basic truthfulness. If you need to add them, maybe we can't trust you at all. Words are powerful. Words can be used to clarify, to convince, to compel. But words can also be used to complicate and to confuse and to conceal. And so I want you to lean in and listen to the next thing Jesus has to say in the Sermon on the Mount. He says, again, you've heard that it was said to those who lived long ago, don't make a false solemn pledge, but you should follow through on what you pledged to the Lord. But I say to you that you must not pledge at all. You must not pledge by heaven, because it's God's throne. You must not pledge by the earth, because it's God's footstool. You must not pledge by Jerusalem, it's the city of the great king. You must not pledge by your head, because you can't turn one hair white or black. Let your yes mean yes, and your no mean no. Anything more than this comes from the evil one. We've looked at a few of these already. These are what we call the antitheses of Jesus. He does this at least six times in this sermon, where he sets up the conversation with this, you've heard that it was said to those long ago, and he quotes something from their Mosaic law, and then he adds something, but I say to you, and he strengthens that, or he at least tries to get that back to its original intention. So he's using this framework over and over and over to get them, and now us, thinking about the difference. You see, Jesus understands that the law mostly was designed to govern people's behavior, behave better on the outside. And he knows that's not sufficient. That's not sufficient for the kingdom of love that he's initiating. So whatever he says, but I say to you, he's always setting it up for here's how it could really work in the kingdom of love. If everybody always acted in love, it would look more like this. If we became human again, the way God always dreamed, it would look more like this. Here's the good news I think Jesus is proclaiming to us today. Excessive and unnecessary words invite mistrust and create loopholes to get out of our commitments. Speaking the simple truth frees us to live in love and build trust with those around us. Now, just for a little context, it's kind of hard for us as 21st century Americans to fully appreciate how startling it would have been to Jesus' original audience to have heard him say this. For many, many centuries, including at the time Jesus was on the earth, it was true that most of society was held together by oaths of loyalty. Oaths of loyalty between subjects and their rulers. Oaths of loyalty between patrons and their clients. The whole world operated on pledging oath to each other. And that's what kept the fabric of society together. So when Jesus shows up and he says something as startling as, you must not pledge an oath to each other. This has the potential to upend their entire way of life. It is that radical, you might say, of a statement. But remember, Jesus is not willing to settle for the ways we have construed life. He is constantly challenging our assumptions about how life can work. He wants to settle for nothing less than love, and Jesus knows love is not captured by transactions. That's a really big idea. If you use an oath, a promise, a covenant to define a commitment, what you're really saying in that covenant, the whole thing's designed to say, I'll do this for you, you will do this for me, we're going to write it down, and we're going to sign it. Okay? It's transactional. I do for you, you do for me. It also means there's a possibility, we put a few loopholes in there that we could figure out and exploit, because eventually we're not going to look at the intent of it or the heart of it necessarily. We're going to look at the actual words. Do the words let me get out of this thing? The whole system is held together by mistrust. I don't trust you to do what you say you're going to do, and you probably don't trust me to do what I say I'm going to do, so we better write it all down and sign off on it, right? It's a mistrust system. That's not how love works, is it? Love is cultivated by trust, and truth-telling is the foundation of trust-building. Isn't that right? Love runs on trust, almost purely on trust in a way, right? Is I got to learn to trust you, you got to learn to trust me, and eventually love says, I'm going to do that. I mean, I realize that you might not always have my best interest in heart, but I'm going to take a risk and we're going to go for it, you know? And then you tell the truth to each other, and you tell the truth to each other again, and over time you just build that foundation of trust in the relationship. This is what Jesus means when he says, let your yes mean yes, let your no mean no. Keep it simple, just tell the truth to each other. Telling the truth is how you love the other person. They don't have to decipher your words. They don't have to sort through all of them to find out what are they really saying? What are they really meaning? They don't worry that you're hiding something, that you're going to pull a fast one on the future, and they just weren't smart enough to catch it right now, you know? Later, that's why they put that in there, right? And telling the truth is how you love you. Man, truth-telling is pretty freeing, isn't it? You don't have to remember what you said, because you just said the truth. You don't have to, your heart stays clean, your motives stay pure. You don't have to figure out, how am I going to defend that later? How am I going to get out of that later? Did I set it up well enough that I could get out of it if I want to? None of that's even on the table. You're just being purely you in that moment. What a freeing, beautiful way for a human to live. Instead of acting in self-protection where I have to protect myself from you, I'm just going to decide to go out on a limb and trust you, and I'm going to ask you to trust me. Now, I know the world doesn't always work like that. Kind of brings us back to last week's conversation. There's the ideal, and then there's the real, right? And so sometimes real is a challenge, but don't forget the ideal matters, and Jesus is always calling us to the ideal. Jesus' ideal is always L-O-V-E, love. Remember what he said? We quote it frequently. You must love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your being, all of your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. The second is like it. You must love your neighbor as yourself. Big sentence coming up. All the law and prophets depend on these two commands. Everything else was always trying to get us to this, he says. If you're going to love your neighbor well, let your yes be yes. Let your no mean no. You mean whichever one you say. Excessive and unnecessary words invite mistrust and create loopholes to get us out of our commitments. Speaking the simple truth frees us to live in love and to build trust with those around us. I've noticed the past few years that is, I hope it's the love of God working in my life. I hope I'm growing in love. I've noticed along the way that I have a new desire to take responsibility for my words. I want my words to do good work for the person I'm speaking them to. I want my words to be evidence of the good work God's doing in me. Here's one way that plays out. Not always, because I'm still broken, so I have plenty of real show up sometimes, but more often, I will find myself pausing to search for the best words to communicate what I really want to say instead of just saying the first thing that comes out of my mouth and eventually getting to what I wanted to say. I love words. I know a lot of words. I use a lot of words. I'm what they call a verbal processor. That simply means I like to talk it out. So I may not even know what I want to say or what I mean, but if we talk long enough, I'll figure it out. And eventually, oh, that's what I was really trying to get to, but that's like, you know, 10,000 words in. And what I've discovered is that's not always helpful for the person who's receiving my words, because they couldn't sort along the way I was sorting along the way, to know which of those words I actually meant, right? They just need me to get to the bottom line at the end and don't let me have to hear all the words it took you to get there, Brian. Yes, I knew I was going to get that from Jeremiah. He says that sort of jokingly, but that's a serious blessing in our relationship, isn't it? Because that's not the thing that works best for him. And it's been a much better way for me to love Jeremiah when sometimes I got to say, get to the words. Just get to the words you need, Brian. I want to say what I mean and not all the words it takes me to get to what I mean. And that means that is on me to take responsibility for that challenge. Now, by the way, here's how the real sometimes plays out, because I am a verbal processor. That's also very true. And that means I actually do need to say lots of words sometimes, especially if it's a challenging or difficult situation. I got to have process time. Like, we got to talk about this for a while. You know what I've also learned to do? Name that. Identify that to the other person on the team or to my wife or whatever and say, okay, here's the thing. I think I'm going to have to talk this out. It may take a little while. If you could be patient with that, and if you don't mind to listen in and help me, I think we'll get somewhere good in a couple of minutes. You know what I'm saying? That is a way of taking responsibility for my words and helping them know, oh, that's what's going on right now? Okay, that's a relief. I don't need to take everything you're about to say at the same level of seriousness. We'll summarize it at the end, right? Yes, we'll do that. So helpful. Say what you mean what you say, and it's a wonderful way to love people you love well. Anybody else know what I'm talking about here? Yeah? I'm not the only verbal processor in here, right? I'm not the only person who's friends with a verbal processor. My wife isn't the only one married to a verbal processor. Excessive and unnecessary words invite mistrust. Sometimes they even create loopholes for us to get out of whatever we're saying right now. Sometimes they just create confusion for the other person who has to take in all our words. Speaking the simple truth frees us to live in love and build trust with those around us. That's good news. St. Francis said, a life of integrity looks like this. It's no use walking anywhere to preach unless our walking is our preaching. In other words, it doesn't do any good to talk about love unless you know how to talk in love. How to speak words that are loving for the other person. So if we wanted to do that, and I know I'm making a bit of an assumption, but let's just say that we're going to go with what Jesus is up to here. What might help us get there? I'll give you two or three thoughts to carry out of here. First, it might help to remember that we're all image bearers. I know we come back to that all the time, but friends, it's such a foundational idea. You have never locked eyes with somebody that God doesn't love. There's not a person in your world, no matter how cantankerous or obstinate or annoying they are, that God didn't think the world needed them, and he loves them, even in their current broken state, okay? And friends, it is a game changer. I think Jeremiah talked about this a couple of weeks ago. This is a game changer. When you start to look through eyes that say, God, I don't always see people with the love you do, but I want to. And when you start to look at people and go, don't forget, God loves them. He loves them as much as he loves me. It changes the perspective with which you approach everything, every conversation, every interaction. It starts with that. Second, it helps to remember we're broken. We're broken. We're all broken. Right on? Yeah, Don Kernan comes to our 10:30 gathering, said we're supposed to say right on, not amen. So I think we're a right on church, he says. So I'm trying to remember that sometimes. Here's the thing. I'm going to fall short of the integrity that I want from you. You're going to fall short of the integrity that you want from me. Or we're going to, however I just said that, we're going to fall short of integrity. Right? We're not always going to get it right. I got to learn to forgive you when you get it wrong. I need you to forgive me when I get it wrong. We need to keep short accounts and remember, if anything, we're just failing together. Right? We're all failing at some point. But we're going to fail together, and we're going to give grace to the people who fail, and we're going to get grace from people when we fail. And it helps a lot just to remember that. That's kind of where we meet, at the bottom. And then don't forget that we are beloved. Even in our brokenness, we're the beloved children of God. Martin Luther King Jr. said, "The type of love that I stress is agape." There are three or four Greek words for love. And he says, "I stress agape love, which is understanding goodwill for all men. It is an overflowing love which seeks nothing in return. It's the love of God working in the lives of men. This is the love that may well be the salvation of our civilization." Friends, hear me. Everybody lean in. This is what's always at stake in these conversations. The salvation of our civilization depends on us becoming the kind of people who love, who always act in love, who speak in love to other people, who give love when other people fall short of the love that we hoped they were going to give to us. The world cannot operate on transactional relationships alone. Now, I realize it's a broken world. We can't get away from contracts and oaths and courts of law and things like that because the world's still broken. But friends, that is not what can power society. That is not what can power a church. That is not what can power up your family. A transactional relationship. I do for you, you do for me, right? That's not how it works, friends. How it works is, if we want to become human again, love. Open your heart, take some risks, and love somebody. Richard Rohr tells the story of his dad who ran a gas station in western Kansas around the time of the Great Depression, when often people couldn't afford to even pay for 5 gallons of gas, and it was way cheaper then than it is now. He said his dad would say to people, "When you can pay it, pay it." And almost everybody did. One guy, he said, came back 10 years later and gave his dad $10 for gas he couldn't pay for back then. I don't recommend trying that at Casey's this afternoon. But I am compelled by the question that Rohr asks afterward. He says, "Can we live in such a world where we talk to one another with absolute simple truth and our word is good?" Does that compel you at all? Can you imagine a world where everybody just spoke the truth to each other? You're never trying to second guess people. You're never trying to figure out later how they played you. You just know and believe everybody's speaking the truth. I always speak the truth. You speak the truth. We trust each other because we're truth tellers. And that's the end of the story. Wouldn't you like to live in a world where people's word actually meant something? There's something in your heart. It's weird. It's weird for me to feel emotional at this moment. I feel emotional in this moment thinking, "Oh God, may your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven." You know? Yes, I want to live in that world. Friends, I want to remind you before you leave here in a couple of minutes, that is the world that God is ushering into existence right now, and he's chosen to do it through us. We get to help that dream come true right there. The salvation of civilization depends on it. Will we become the kind of people who speak the truth to others and just trust them? And our yes means yes, and our no means no. And we don't have to prop it up because we're truth tellers. Excessive and unnecessary words invite mistrust. They create loopholes to get out of commitments if we want to. Speaking the simple truth frees us to live in love, and it builds trust with those around us. Now, I want you to think for a moment why it's important to you personally for people to say what they mean and mean what they say. Why does that even matter to you? Why are you even paying attention to this sermon at all about that subject? Why is it important to you for people to mean what they say and say what they mean when they talk to you? Anybody want to throw in for a minute? What came to your mind when I asked that question? Yeah. I want to be trusted and I want to be able to trust. We all know trust matters, right? Somebody else, what came to mind?
I've got three friends that I'm blessed to have that do farming with and yeah. Stuff like that.
Yeah.
And we run cattle together and things. Mm-hmm. And it is so rare in the world today that we don't have anything written down. We just know this is how we're going to do it.
Yeah.
This stuff gets paid.
Yeah.
When I break down, I know
Right.
That's what makes it so great to live in a small town, a small community,
yeah.
and still have that, like, maybe.
Yes. Days. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And when you do have it, you know how precious it is, right?
Exactly.
It's so easy to lose it. And again, the whole world doesn't operate that way right now. I'm not saying there's no need for contracts or oaths or whatever. I'm saying that's not the dream that God has for us. That's not the picture Jesus is painting. He's painting this picture when that's not unusual anymore, and everything operates like that. What else comes to mind? Anything else? Whenever I know you're telling me the truth, what? Oh, absolutely. Think about how much mental space it frees up when you're not trying to second guess the other person all the time, right? Don't you even know how that works in your own relationships at home, right? If husband and wife, we're just speaking the truth to each other. I'm not then going off into the yard and thinking, what did she really mean when she said that?
Yeah.
Right? Or what did he leave out? Oh, he didn't say that. You know, it's like no games, no second guessing. And if you have questions, isn't it a beautiful thing to go, oh, we didn't talk about that. I'm just going to go back and ask them, right? Like, you just go back and start the conversation and ask them, and no, they'll tell me the truth. There'll be no games. Don't you want to live in that world? Don't you feel loved when people trust you to tell you the truth? Don't you feel loved when you feel like, I can trust this person enough that I can just say the truth to them? I don't have to worry about the fallout's going to come if I just lovingly speak the truth. What a world Jesus paints a picture of for us. And that's all he's asking over and over and over in the Sermon on the Mount. He's not necessarily saying, okay, everybody, go speak the truth today, although that would be great. What he's saying is, if you want to live in a world like that, it's happening right now. Jump in. Help us create that world. That's what God always dreamed relationships would look like. Speak the truth. You see, there's a world of unnecessary and excessive words that invite mistrust and create loopholes for us to exploit. And friends, I got to tell you some good news today. That world is passing away. And there is another world where speaking the simple truth frees us to live in love and build trust with people around us. And friend, that world is the world God is birthing into existence right this minute through us. If you want to get in on it, let your yes mean yes, let your no mean no. Speak the truth, build trust, let's see what happens. I promise you, it'll be good. Right on?
No.
Yes, it will.